Alan Kohler here, and I'm talking to Philip Lynch, who is the CEO of Race Oncology. Now, Race was basically formed, I guess, 6 years ago to acquire a drug called bisantrene, which is a chemotherapy drug for various cancers. It was discovered in the 1970s by an American company called Liddell Laboratories, which ended up discontinuing it, and the thing got lost, and this drug has now resurfaced in Race Oncology, and they've now spent $10 million in those 6 years taking it through further trials. It's currently in phase two trials. The market cap is $280 million. Now, I spoke to Phil Lynch a year ago, March the 22nd, in fact, 2021, at which point the share price was at the absolute peak of $4 a share. And since then, it's been downhill all the way. So if you bought on the back of that interview, I'm very sorry, because it's gone down and it's currently at about $1.70, $1.75, and it's sunk particularly rapidly since the beginning of April, so 2 months ago, which basically seems to be entirely to do with the decline in biotech generally, particularly in the US, also here, because there's been nothing announced by Race Oncology that, you know, it was particularly negative about what's going on. They're continuing to progress it through trials. I mean, the aim of this thing, like a lot of businesses like this, is to sell the company to Big Pharma. And, you know, they're working on that. Obviously, they want to get the share price up before they sell. He reckons they can get it back to $4, but we'll see about that. I mean, but in any case, this is a drug that really belongs inside Big Pharma, in particular big companies that sell chemotherapy drugs, because it's used in combination with other chemotherapies. And in particular, what its purpose, what it was discovered for, what it was developed for by Liddell Laboratories in the 70s, was to protect the heart, to reduce cardiotoxicity, as they call it, of chemotherapy, which it seems to do. So not only does it work as a chemotherapy, but it also protects the heart from other chemotherapy drugs. So that's the whole thing about this bisantrene drug, which they're developing. And so far, so good. Obviously, it's still risky. There's still trials to be done and patients to be assessed, but they are ongoing. So here's Philip Lynch, the CEO of Race Oncology. Phil, as always, we start with cash and cash flow. What's your current burn rate and how much cash have you got in the bank?
Yeah, sure, Alan. 31 March 22, we reported $35.7 million in the bank. I should mention, when I spoke to you a year ago, we had 6.5, so a significantly better cash position, a good position. Your question on burn, well, our current burn is about $1 million a month, although I should say for us and biotechs generally, it's very much driven and influenced by clinical program investment, particularly clinical, not preclinical, but clinical, because per patient costs are high. So our burn will accelerate in the future, but we're in a good cash position right now.
How long do you think that cash will last?
That'll take us right through 2024. So obviously, you know, circa 18 months from now, subject to any changes in our programs. But all programs that we've advertised that shareholders have helped fund, we're able to fund going forward.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that we spoke a year ago. It was actually in March.
22 March,
there you go. And when I spoke to you, the share price was $4, which was the tippy top of your share price. It had gone up tenfold in 12 months and now it's back down to $1.70 something. So to what extent is that decline in share price just the biotech market? And has there been any news out of your drug that has caused that to happen?
Yeah, I think, Alan, the first thing I would say is to give you some data and your listeners some data. I mean, the XBI, which is a US biotech index, that index is down 61% since peak. Calendar year to date, it's down 39%. And in the month of April alone, the US biotech index dropped 35%. So answering your question, sadly or unfortunately, we and frankly most of the Australian biotechs mirror pretty much perfectly the US biotech. So that's, you know, the larger explanation for what's transpired. Is there anything in our activities? Well, our activities remain effectively on track. We continue to report. We've had some very minor delays to our programs, but nothing untoward. And we've continued to update the market as programs and results land. And where we've been delayed, we've tried to give, you know, updates and let people know where we're tracking and what's coming ahead of us.
Just before we get into the latest updates, just give us a bit on the background of your drug, Xantrine, which we talked about last time, but let's go through it again. It was discovered in the 70s by a company called Liddell Laboratories. It ended up being taken over. The company ended up being taken over and then hived off, and the thing got lost. And what happened?
Yeah, it did get lost to a degree. We've in fact managed to reach in the last, coincidentally, last couple of weeks, a couple of people that worked on the drug. And, you know, hearsay from them at least is that at the time they were narrowing their pipeline. They had a lot of candidates in development. Bisantrine was one of them. But bisantrine relative to another drug was dropped in favor of the other drug that they progressed. So effectively it was lost until the Race Oncology founders purchased the IP and brought it back to market, which was the case. So a drug that had a lot of promise. It was a differentiated chemotherapeutic because it was developed to be less cardiotoxic, or if I could say friendlier to the heart. And chemotherapeutics offer, I mean, they're good drugs and they've got a long history, but they are challenging. And one aspect of that challenge is heart damage. So ours was developed to be less heart damaging.
I mean, I would have thought they wouldn't have dropped it if it was any good. Is that a inexpert thing to say?
Well, I mean, Alan, there's so many elements that determine whether a drug makes it. I mean, I won't quote stats, but I think we all know broadly it could be 5% of every 100% of drugs actually get to market. There are many reasons why drugs fail, and frankly, a lot of good drugs. Like bisantrine have fallen or not made it to market, but then subsequently, you know, being rediscovered and ended up, you know, having a future pathway that's much larger. So it happens. It can be strategic prioritization. It can be capital and cash. It can be, you know, adverse results. It can be, frankly, that it's developed for one purpose and then suddenly it's discovered that it does something really well in another area of oncology, which is certainly what we're learning. Because our drug was developed with a purpose in mind, that purpose remains true. It's a relevant and effective drug in the acute myeloid leukemia space, and we're clinically trialing that in that space right now in Israel, again, for the second time. We've got programs in that space, but we've identified other opportunities that we might touch on where our drug has relevance.
Right, so just bring us up to date on where you're at with your trials.
Yeah, I think the important thing to know is that we're actually in patients. So we're in clinical trial right now in Israel. That's the second time. So in 2020, we were in trial as a single agent in a small patient population. We got a 40% response rate. We're back in trial.
What does 40% response rate mean?
It means that in a number of patients, we achieve what's called either a partial response or a complete response in addressing disease. As measured by the investigators who have the ability to measure that disease in respect of efficacy and response to treatment.
And what phase are these trials?
They're going to phase two.
Right, and this is the one in Israel?
Yeah, so the one in Israel right now, Alan, is what we call a combination drug trial. So we're in program with a couple of other drugs. So it's designed to be, if you like, a cocktail that achieves a higher level of efficacy. So our drug has properties that are useful, but so do other drugs. And when you combine them, you're likely to get a better effect. And that's what's being trialed in Israel right now.
Right. So is your drug always going to be used in combination with other drugs?
Generally, that's true. It may be sequentially used in isolation, but generally to get the best result in oncology, physicians will always treat with a combination treatment. So the answer is largely yes.
And what other trials have you got going?
I think the particularly interesting one we're starting in Australia is back in AML, which is our, if you like, our sweet spot or our legacy.
But what is AML?
Acute myeloid leukemia.
Right.
So it's a blood cancer, which affects the bone marrow. And that's where I should have mentioned that back in the 90s, in 1990, we in fact had an approval in France that wasn't progressed. So again, we're back in AML in Israel, but we're now in AML in Australia. And we got approval to progress that trial. So right now we're progressing towards patient recruitment. And when we treat our first patient, we'll be announcing that to the market. And we hope that happens this quarter. So that, Alan, is in what we call the extramedullary form of AML. So I said that AML is a disease of the bone marrow, but it can leave the bone marrow and move to other parts of the body, acting more like a solid tumor. And the way to identify that is through imaging. So we, or the physicians, use imaging to identify that. And where we identify those patients, we'll give them a couple of different options of using bisantrene with other drugs to try to address their AML.
Right. So you're also looking at breast cancer and I think melanoma. Is that right? And when we last spoke, you talked a bit about FTO, and I forget what that stands for and what the significance of it is. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so the significance there goes back to a hospital called the City of Hope in LA. And that hospital identified that FTO, the fat, mass, and obesity associated protein, is a oncology driver. And people with elevated levels of that protein are likely to have poorer outcomes on their cancer. So when they identified that, they tested the NCI, National Cancer Institute database, 270,000 compounds, and bisantrene tested number one as the most effective drug at mitigating or helping to rebalance that protein, the FTO protein. So that became...
Is that designed then to head off cancer rather than treat it?
It's designed to regulate a dysregulated protein. So that protein is, if you like, out of control. And in all cancers, you know, said simply, There are cells that are frankly out of control or have lost equilibrium. So the FTO protein is one of those, and our drug has the ability to regulate that protein. So what we need to prove in people, because we've proved it in cells, we're trying to prove it in animals and ultimately prove in people that if we can regulate that protein and bring it back under control, that we will get a better cancer outcome. And better cancer outcomes mean either mitigating the cancer or extending survival or extending quality of life. So that's, Alan, what we're trying to do in, you mentioned breast correctly. Equally, we've got some learnings in kidney cancer that we believe make us a candidate potentially for kidney cancer. And also melanoma, as said before. So we've got, in fact, we've got melanoma results due imminently. We're just working through some patent work related to those results that before we can actually bring them to market and announce them.
Right. So the way you've expressed it, I think, is that you've got three pillars of your programs or your plan, three pillars. Yep. Pillar one is FTO and melanoma. Pillar two is breast cancer and some sort of something you're calling anthracycline replacement.
The third one you're referring to is what we call cardioprotection. And this one is new. We haven't discussed it because we learned this late last year. But when you use our drug, bisantrene, in combination with an existing anthracycline, it appears that you get a cardioprotective effect. And what's important about that is that it means you can potentially give more of the chemotherapeutic, i.e. get a better clinical outcome, but equally and surprisingly do so without getting the cardio damage that you would normally expect. So adding our drug to an existing chemotherapeutic in combination may well mean that you get more efficacy and you get a better or a lower cardio outcome. So no or less
cardio. You mean bisantrene protects the heart in some way?
Yeah, exactly. So that's we've learned that in cell testing. We've currently got animal work underway. And if that animal work is successful, we hope to move that evaluation into the clinic, therefore in people, and to be doing so over the middle part of this year. And you may know that we raised money from shareholders back in December last year. And one of the programs we raised against was exactly that, the cardioprotective program.
Right. So the way you've expressed it is you've got the three pillars or three strategies designed to result in either license or sale to a scaled farmer. So what's it likely to be, license or sale?
I think, Alan, the reality of partnering, and I should say we've already got a drug supply partner. So our Australian AML, so the acute myeloid leukemia study in Australia of the extramedullary form, that one already has a partner who's supplying drugs. So we'll call that a partnership.
Who's that?
What's like, that's that. Yeah, United. That's a Japanese United. Company. A Japanese company.
Oh, I see. Not an Australian company.
No. Most of the drug companies, as you would appreciate, are all international. That's Aztec Pharmaceuticals. So they're supplying that drug, and drug companies are happy to work with people like us, where we've got, if you like, the ability to improve either their drug or their drug in ours to get a better combination and outcome for patients. So if we get good results, that partnership could lead to a license. It could lead to something further. So all of our programs, ultimately, as we generate data, will be trying to identify the appropriate partners to work with. And with that data, if we create appropriate IP value, that's where you attract, obviously, broader and larger pharma interest. The one I might mention, Alan, the cardioprotective story, chemotherapy remains backbone treatment for cancer across many types of, tumors. So if our cardioprotective program works and it demonstrates efficacy in patients, that's potentially a very large opportunity that we could partner with large suppliers of chemotherapeutic drugs. And potentially we can formulate our drug with their drugs and create formulation opportunities that give us intellectual property and therefore make it highly relevant for those companies to look at acquiring us, or rather our IP. So that's the objective. And so everything we do clinically has that in mind. But it starts with patients. If we can generate a good patient result, if the economics create value for the industry, then we're likely to create interest from pharma partners.
Well, in fact, if you actually do come up with something that protects the heart, I mean, it'll make sense for one of these big chemotherapy producers to buy you, surely.
Well, entirely, and that's what we're trying to work through. So that's certainly a high potential space. I mean, it's certainly one that we're progressing very quickly, and that's why we appreciated getting shareholder support when we raised in December, because we want to get that into the clinic and demonstrate results. It's a big opportunity. Cardio damage is a real risk of chemotherapy, and you can get people through cancer sometimes for a number of years, and it can be their heart that gives out, and frankly, or sadly, that takes away their life at an earlier time, having beaten the cancer.
Hey, by the way, what does extramedullary mean?
Extramedullary, or EMD is how we define it. Extramedullary means that the cancer has left the bone marrow and traveled to other parts of the body. And we discovered when we did our first Israel trial in 2020 that that 40% response that I mentioned, those four patients, in fact, had extramedullary. And when we administered bisantrene, the extramedullary left very much their tissue, and they saw a marked clinical effect. So again, that's why we're focused on that cohort of people. So it's a cohort of people that are not effectively targeted, and us targeting them may provide clinical benefits to them.
Was that bisantrene on its own?
That was, in that case, it was bisantrene on its own. But when we take it out in the Australian trial, we're going to do it with a couple of other drugs.
Right. So, I mean, at what point does a company like yours get bought in terms of its progress through the phases? Do companies ever get bought at phase two, or do the big pharmas always wait till phase three is done?
No, in fact, we would either, and I'll say we will get bought, in my opinion, at a phase, more likely a phase two level, because phase two data is efficacy data. So phase two defines efficacy, phase one defines safety. So once you've got phase two data, you've demonstrated that your drug works in a population of people and it has efficacy and results. So therefore, that's the opportune time for drug companies to look at us and frankly, us to look at marketing our results. So that's what we're out there to generate. And we've got the ability to do it shortly in AML, acute myeloid leukemia. But equally in the future, we hope through a different application of chemotherapy, which is the cardioprotective chemotherapy. And the one we touched on earlier, FTO. FTO is, Alan, I would say preclinical. And further answering your question, big pharma companies can acquire earlier. It can happen at a preclinical stage if they see significant results in an area that they think is sufficiently large. Sometimes they can make bets, and that could play out as well. But I mean, I'll say to be fair, that's more remote. But the FTO opportunity remains large, but we need to progress it and probably demonstrate more results before we get attention for it.
Yeah, but City of Hope identified bisantrene at the top of the FTO treatments, didn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why we've jumped ahead, and I think you would note, as you did last year, that our share price responded. People understood that story, appreciated it, and we're progressing that through continued cell-based testing, but equally animal testing. And we, in that December raise last year, equally received from shareholders about $9 million to support an FTO study in patients, i.e. a clinical study. So we're going to get that done. We're just trying to figure out the best type of cancer to go after. So we need to be confident that we're targeting the right cancer where we can create a good patient outcome and a good economic outcome for everybody.
But you won't want to sell the company until that's done though, will you? I mean, that could substantially increase your value.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, there's a catch 22. Shareholders often ask, well, why aren't we trying to sell the company now? And obviously, you know, at wherever we are, $1.75, that's not a good time to be outselling the company. We would rather generate results, staircase those results out so that we create, you know, share price appreciation, and then go out and market at the right time off a much higher base to generate value. Because I think we all know that when people get acquired on listed companies, you know, there's a premium, but it's 30, 40, 50%. It's rarely more than 100%.
Yeah, fair enough. Liddell Laboratories, which discovered the drug, originally ended up inside Pfizer. So I just wonder if there's anyone still there at Pfizer who might be interested in getting it back.
Well, yeah, I mean, the pharma guys, their life is many of them. So we have met a couple of people I mentioned earlier of late that we're talking to about the drug, and we continue to network through those contacts, and we're talking to more people. So we never know. That may well take us to people that might be able to help us. But that's certainly the game plan, and we're working hard on it. And I think everything we're doing is taking us in the right direction. But, you know, we're in the drug business, and it's higher risk, but equally higher reward when you get it right. So we're going to keep pushing along and making sure we're making progress accordingly.
Yeah, so you basically, just to in a sense summarise where we're at, you're at phase two on you're working on phase two trials on on bisantrene, and it's in particular that particularly focuses on the heart protection aspect of it. Is that right?
Well, that's right. But I would
and the efficacy as a chemotherapy.
Yeah, in combination with other drugs for acute myeloid leukemia. So that is yes. And I would also mention, Alan, we haven't touched on it, but we're also improving our drug's delivery mechanism. So we're creating an intravenous formula. And by doing so, that will give us the opportunity to use the drug more efficiently in solid tumor oncology, which is where our FTO program is progressing. So that's in front of us. And we raised a small amount of money from our last raise, which we're targeting to other molecules that we may or may not progress, but it gives us the opportunity to look at other mechanisms as we learn and as we network with people that understand what we're doing. That's an opportunity we may or may not progress. So we've got, if I compare to a year ago, we've got, you know, $30 million more in the bank than we had a year ago. We've got three opportunities versus two when we last spoke. And we're improving our drug and its ability, you know, to operate better in patients. So we're in a far better place, but we need to deal with this market. And the market will turn at some point. And when it does, we hope to be on the front end of it.
Race Oncology acquired this bisantrene in 2016. Do you have in your mind how much money the company has spent so far?
Alan, I'd have to go back and look at that number, but it would be circa, I'm going to give you a circa view of about, you know, circa $10 million cumulatively. So our spend is accelerating, but it's been modest to date because historically we had one opportunity, but now we have three opportunities and a number of different ways of commercializing value. So that's why we're larger and we're valued accordingly, and we've raised capital, and we've got a number of programs underway. So that's entirely appropriate. So we're making progress.
Yeah, right. Well, your market cap at the moment is 280 million. So that's not a bad outcome for $10 million spent, I guess. So far, I mean, it was worth obviously more than twice that at one point.
Yeah, I believe we'll get it back there and beyond in the future. But you know, we've got the capital to, you know, go forward on programs. These programs, as you know, cost a lot of money, but they're investments in learning, and they're investments in making progress. And we've got the capital to do them. I think that's in a difficult market that we're all in right now. We think that's what separates us from many others. So multiple opportunities. We've got the cash to go after our plan. We've got a clear strategy, and we've got a good team to go out and get it done. So that's a good position to be in, frankly, difficult times.
Yep. Good to talk to you, Phil. Thanks very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Alan.
That was Philip Lynch, the CEO of Race Oncology.